Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lisa.
And definitely grateful to be here and be sober. And thank you so much for having me come out here. I haven't been here in a few years. And there are quite a few people in this room that have helped me very much during my sobriety. And I feel very grateful to have gotten to know a lot of you. And so to come out to this meeting is a privilege for me. And quite frankly, it's a privilege to get to participate in a meeting, any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous like this. And I feel like even just to be able to have a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous for me is a privilege. It really is. And I have to be reminded of that on a daily basis. And luckily, I have lots of people in my life to remind me about that. So, and I have a sobriety date, December 4th of 2006, and my home group is the Midtown group, and I am very grateful to be an active member of that group. And very grateful. I got a chance to speak there about a month ago, and I was sharing with them that it really holds close to my heart. It is that group. If you haven't had a chance to come out and see us, we're in Bethesda. We meet at 7:30 to 9 o'clock every Sunday night, and it is truly a pocket of enthusiasm in Alcoholics Anonymous. And for someone like me, when I got to AA, to fall into a group that was so active like that, I'm someone that really feeds off of the people that I'm around. And, you know, these men and women were just, they're really doing the deal there. And it's, you know, you get swept up in that, even if you don't want to. And that's like, you know, people are really doing the stuff. You know, I'm more likely to actually be doing the stuff. So, I love my home group. And then I also have a sponsor. I've always had a sponsor in AA since my third meeting. And I've had three sponsors in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm very, very grateful for what each and every one of them has given me over the last 6 or so years. They are incredible women that I am still. One is getting married in like a few weeks, and I'm in her wedding. And another one, moved to Colorado and is really living her dreams out, and it's really incredible to see. And the sponsor that I have today, Kathleen, she's been out to this group to speak, and Melissa and I share the same sponsor. And she's an incredible example of a sober woman in Alcoholics Anonymous that really holds me accountable to this program and a relationship with a God in my understanding, which I had no idea how to do when I got here. So people like that are really valuable to me in my life today. And let me just say a few things before I get started. One is, anything that I talk about with you guys about my life before and when I was drinking is all upon reflection once I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I could not see any of the stuff about myself until I got to AA and started working the steps. That's number one. Number two is anything that comes out of my mouth that sounds reasonable in any manner or logical or sounds like a good way to live or great idea that is also not anything that has to do with me or that I came up with myself, that has to do with all these people that are in my life today, whether it's my friends or my sponsor or my home group or, all the meetings that I get to, or newcomers or anybody, that all comes from AA, not this girl. So I have quite a while to share with you guys here. So I think it's a good idea to give you a little bit of an idea of what I was like before I started drinking. And I don't like to get too much into the debate of whether I was born an alcoholic or with alcohol. I don't know. All I know is that I needed to drink the way that I drank in order to end up here, for me personally. And but I will say we had some problems that really needed a drink by the time I took a drink. Let's put it that way. I grew up in a very loving, very, like, respectable home. Like, I have nothing to blame anything that happened in my life on. I had no tragedies when I was younger. I had, my parents are, like, were going in at the end of May to celebrate their 40th wedding anniversary, which they want me to go with them on this trip, which is lovely and crazy that they actually want me to spend a week with them somewhere out of the country. And they had a very loving relationship. They were excellent examples to me of, how you should live with, morals and values. And, you know, my brother and sister, they really, like, latched onto that, and they got it, and they were, like, rocking and rolling the rest of their life. Me, on the other hand, I did not pick up on things like honesty, you know, kindness, even from, like, a young age, very young age, like, I really learned to lie very early on. Lying just seemed very natural to me. Why would you tell the truth if this lie could get you out of trouble? And I was always, from like a very young age, I was always sort of pushing the limits. For a long time, until I actually started drinking, did I really start to get in trouble. But it was younger ages that I would push it right to the edge and maybe go over a little bit sometimes and like start lying about whatever was happening. You know, I had, you know, I was, and this is, I'm a dumb liar too. Like I am the liar that's like arrogant and he gets like, I'm like the kid who, I was thinking about this today. My parents set a rule like no cooking while we're gone. No cooking. Don't use the stove. You don't know what you're doing. You're 10 years old, right? As soon as they leave the house, you know, what I decide, you know, I'm going to make donuts, you know, with hot oil. And, I've never made donuts before, but I really want donuts right now, you know. And I start to make the donuts and, you know, thought it was like, you know, put the oil in, turn it on high like water. When you do that, tends to create a fire. And I'm 10 and I haven't learned in science class that when you pour water on a fire, on a grease fire, that continues to make the fire grow bigger. And, you know, and I burnt the cabinets and I burned a hole in the ceiling and my parents are coming home in an hour and I'm going to get this together. We're going to get it together, you know? And I'm painting the ceiling and I'm having a neighbor rewrite the recipes that had burned above the stove. And, you know, and the whole house smells like, I don't know, a fire just happened and burned, you know, things in the house. And, you know, when they get home and it's like, you know, what happened in here? What happened in here? What do you mean? What happened in here? Nothing happened in here. What's this? What's it? You know, and it's like, play dumb. Like, they're not going to know. I don't know what happened here. You're the only one home. Like, I have no idea. It was the neighbor. It was whatever. You know, and it's clear, like, that's the lying that I picked up. And, you know, and I continued that on with them. You know, I'm the girl that, you know, steals her parents' credit card. And knows the PIN number, not the debit card, the credit card, knows the PIN number of it, takes it to an ATM, and gets a cash advance out, you know, and my parents come to me. There's been money stolen from, you know, our account. Do you know who would have done that? No, I have no idea who would have done that. You do know that there's cameras at the ATM. Oh, I guess I did take the credit card, you know, like, I mean, it's like, obvious, it's you took the credit card, it's on the camera, you know, and I will lie to get out of anything, and I really believe that, you know, there's like countless stories on and on, and this is even before I started drinking that, you know, I started to really, and I would lie to anyone about anything, and what I mean by that is that when I would meet someone, I just wanted to be what you needed me to be in order to get what I thought I needed from you. And that makes it very difficult to start to form real relationships with people because you're fake and you're not being real. And, you know, and so I kind of build that story because by the time that I took my first drink, I was already so uncomfortable in my own skin and riddled by fear too. I mean, I do relate to a lot of people when they talk about, you know, being fearful of the world around them. And I didn't know how to tell you that or whatever that was, but I didn't like participating in life. I didn't like participating in sports, but I did it because I was scared of what you were going to think of me. I didn't like participating in this school group activity, but I did it because I didn't want my parents to be disappointed, just scared, fearful. And with all that lovely combination going on, you know, eventually I got to my first drink. And my first drink was in eighth grade, and that was no big deal. It was boring, and I didn't get drunk. So, but my second real, well, I call it my first drunk, because that's really what set me off. My first drunk was actually a little bit later in between my sophomore and junior year of high school. And I remember, and I can still remember today, that when I drank and got drunk that way, that I couldn't wait to do it again. I didn't say to myself, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life or anything. Like, I mean, some people say that, something happens, some people that doesn't happen for them, but I remember thinking that this was something awesome. Like, why haven't I been doing this earlier, you know? And it was, what happened for me, though, was a very profound change. After that first drunk, I, you know, we talk about crossing the line. I could look back now and say that I pretty much crossed the line, because what happened for me was, after that first drunk, anything and everything in my life at that time, which was the sports, was the academics, all that stuff I was scared of doing, but I did it anyways, you know, close family relationships, all these friends that I had gathered over the years, all of those things, immediately for me, went out the window. It was like a complete shift. It went from being this one person one day to the next day that it became a full-blown obsession for me. And I was, you know, 15, 16 years old. And I was so grateful when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous that even in my first meeting, I still remember that they were talking about, you know, the physical allergy and, but in particular, the mental obsession, because the mental obsession from that moment on until I got, you know, until I got into sobriety did not stop for the next 12 or 13 years. And I was somebody that when I was not drinking, I was thinking about drinking. I was plotting and planning drinking. Even the anticipation of an upcoming drink, whether, you know, it was in the next 5 minutes or it was 2-3 hours down the road, like down the day, would calm me down enough, you know. And I really did at that point, like, number one, alcohol became the number one priority in my life. And I can say definitively that for the next 12 or 13 years, it was very, very rare that anything ever trumped that, ever. And I had, tons of loving people in my life. I had great things going on in my life, lots of reasons to stop drinking, and I didn't. And what happened for me was when alcohol becomes your number one priority, for me, I was not somebody. I always hear people when they're telling their stories and they're talking about all these things they accomplished, and they were still drinking, and, you know, but they were getting their degrees and they were getting these great jobs. That was not me. I did not have it together. I was not accomplishing anything. When I got to AA, I thought that, you know, I would compare out, oh, these people lost all these things, you know, the houses and the husbands, the wives, whatever, you know, and that didn't happen to me. Well, I was never capable of accumulating any of those things because there was no room to do that in my life. And here's what happened. I explain this a lot. Like, the rest of my drinking kind of looks like this. It's a series of this same story. It's a series of, like, for instance, when it was time to graduate high school. I'm barely graduating high school. And I technically did not graduate high school. I got to walk, and then I had to finish high school and college. And if you want to know how to do that, it's really easy. We can talk about it afterwards. It's not something special. I was not special in any way. That has to do with my mom. You know, once again, picking up the pieces. Let me just stop right now. By the time that I started drinking was also the time that we started to go, a lot of my parents and the people around me started to be like, what's wrong with her? That's a lot. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? I don't know what's wrong. What's wrong with you? Like, what's something wrong with me? There's something wrong with you. Stop asking me what's wrong with me. I know that I messed up again. Whatever. You know, that started the whole cycle of trying to, like, help Elise, clean up Elise's life, get Elise together. And so I just want to be straight that I had a lot of great people in my life that were trying to help me. But, you know, I came up with my first grand plan when I was drinking that, to clean up my life. And my first grand plan was, I woke up one day and realized that everyone was going away to college. And, I didn't want to miss out on that. Well, how would that look? And, we were all leaving in 6 weeks. Everybody knew where they're going and I didn't. And I was barely graduating high school. And, my poor parents, they just wanted the best for me, and I came up with this grand plan that I was going to go to school in Vegas, you know, to clean up your life. Going to go to school in Vegas because we're going to get – and here's the deal. Here's what, like, it reminds me of, like, being alcoholic today is, like, you know, I really believed that. I really truly believed that this is it. This is we're gonna get it together there. You know, and my poor parents, they gave me the ability to go out to Vegas, and I get to Vegas, and you know, Vegas is not exactly conducive to a sober lifestyle. What happened for me there was actually when I first got there for my first semester, I didn't have a lot of access to alcohol, which sounds a little strange, but I was really scared of going out in public and talking to people, and I didn't have my friends around anymore because, you know, those were the friends that were the problem, and if I just moved away from them, then I could get my life together. But I didn't have those friends around me anymore, and I go to Vegas, and I don't have alcohol, and I don't know that I'm suffering from alcoholism, and I go crazy. I literally go crazy. I become an insomniac, and I can barely leave my house. I can barely leave my house to go to school. I would drive to school in my car. I would get to the parking lot. I really wanted to go in, and then I would turn the car around and go right back out of the parking lot because I couldn't fathom going in there and talking to people and being around people, and I hated people. And I was not pleasant to be around, so that's not very conducive to making friends. And I would come home and I would spend all the time in my apartment, and I would like order, I was a big like infomercial watcher because I'd be up at like 3 or 4 in the morning, and I ordered like a home gym, and this home gym came to my house because I could not leave my house to go outside the door, down the stairs into the gym because I like to run. I couldn't make it down the stairs. Because without drinking by that time, I just couldn't live life. I couldn't deal with anything. And, I got this home gym and it had like this harness on it, and I would like suspend myself from a door by myself in my apartment. And I would just like run in place for like hours and hours and hours, you know, and like trying to like, you know, like deal with, you know, and I just would be calling people all the time, and, you know, I was by myself, and I would white knuckle it through the week, and I would drive every weekend to Arizona to be with my high school friends that I tried to get away from so that I could clean up my life. And, I decided that Vegas was the problem, and I moved to Arizona where the party was. And I just want to say that, like, my drinking never got better. It always got worse. Everywhere I went, every move that I make, my drinking always got worse. And when I moved to Arizona, I had lots of opportunity to party there. And I really did it up, and, you know, drugs got involved in the situation there, and I got my first DUI there. And let me tell you that, like, DUIs and, you know, also, like, that doesn't necessarily make me alcoholic. I'll tell you what makes me alcoholic, and it's my first clear picture of, you know, being an alcoholic for me, is that I got a DUI at like 3 a.m. in Arizona, and I swore that I wasn't going to drink for like a couple days, not ever again, or not even for a week, just a couple days. And by the end of that day, at like 5 or 6, after I had gotten out of jail, after whatever, by the end of that day, it was, you know, 5 or 6, and my friend said, I want to, you know, why don't we play a board game, Yahtzee? And number one, I didn't even know how to play Yahtzee. Number two, I didn't even play board games. And I was like, sure, let's do that. And she said, well, you know, we'll have a beer. And I was like, okay. You know, like, it's like, okay. I'm forgetting that I'm not drinking anymore, but okay. And, you know, immediately I take that beer. And I don't remember playing Yahtzee. You know, I'm a blackout drinker, and I've been a blackout drinker from the get-go, and I don't remember playing Yahtzee, and but all I know is that when I put alcohol into my system, I've learned this in AA, that I have no idea what's going to happen, and I don't know how many drinks I'm going to take, and a lot of times I don't know where I'm going to end up or who I'm going to end up with, but that I have no control over that. And not only do I not have control over that actual when I put alcohol into my system, but I learned that I actually don't even have the control over the thought that precedes the first drink. You know, and I had made a resolution that I wasn't going to drink that day, at least that day or the next day, and I didn't stand a chance, and I didn't know that, and, you know, Arizona got too heavy for me, you know, I hit a bottom there, drugs helped with that little piece of it, I was not a drug addict, I just did like to do a lot of drugs to keep the party going, you know, that was kind of my deal, and, you know, I hit another bottom in Arizona, and I, decided to move back home to be with my parents because now my parents are going to fix me. And it was all about that. My whole life is like trying to figure out how you're going to fix me, how you're going to fix me, how they're going to fix me, and never knowing, you know, that there was an issue here that I had no control over and no one else had any control over, and they did not stand a chance in being able to help me because I had lots of people trying to help me, like I said, and I had therapists and judges and police officers and teachers and counselors and parents and friends and other family members. I mean, just a ton of people always trying to help me, and no one could ever get through until I got here. And I'll tell you about that in a minute. But, you know, I ended up coming back, not coming back here. My parents moved here, and I moved here to be with my parents. And here's where, you know, like, it really started to, like, get going of, like, a lot of the controlling of the drinking, which I would have told you when I got to AA that I did not try to control my drinking. Okay? I didn't try, I don't know why I would have told you that, because there's lots of, you know, reasons, but I come to find out, like, I really tried to control my drinking in some awesome ways. A couple would be that I've been, like, really in my head lately, is, like, I mentioned earlier that I'm a runner, and I stopped running for a long time, and then I got here, and, you know, I'd hit another bottom when I got here, and I was like, all right, well, maybe if I, you know, get healthy, maybe if I start running, again, that, you know, that would sort of kind of get me on the right path or sort of, and then I found out that I really liked running when I've had a few glasses of wine or a bottle of wine, which is, I was telling you in a meeting, I mean, it's very relaxing, but very dangerous considering, in sobriety about 3 years ago when I was running sober, I fell and dislocated my shoulder. So I don't know how, that didn't happen when I was drinking and running, but, you know, so there we go. Like, running is not going to help me get my, my life together, or slow it down, or reading books like, what was it, Eating, Drinking, and Overthinking, The Toxic Triangle. that didn't help either. And still, by the way, when I'm reading these things or doing these things, I'm not thinking in my head, I need to stop drinking. I just need to fix all these other areas of my life, not the drinking. And, you know, I picked up another DUI, and you know, and then when I picked up my second DUI, I met a police officer, a cop, and I really made a conscious decision that if I just dated this cop, perhaps he could help me get my life together. And that did not work out really well. For the next 4 or 5 years, that made for a very volatile and disgusting relationship with a police officer who had usually was quite baffled by my behavior and the actions that I took and the way that I treated him and treated other people. And one of his favorites, I just shared this with me the other day, one of his favorite things to do was to breathalyze me after I'd been drinking, because he didn't understand why when we would go out and have 4 beers, why I would be so drunk. And I told the meeting, I was like, and in my head, I'm thinking, you know, you would be really drunk too, officer, if you had drank 2 bottles of wine before you got to meet, you know, came to meet me. So, you know, and that's like sort of what my drinking looked like too. Like, I didn't do all my drinking in a day with those same people, you know. We drink, party by myself, end up with some people, but, you know, everyone always like, how'd she get so drunk? Like, you know, it's because I've been drinking all day long. What do you mean? You know, so the cop thing, that didn't work out very well. He did, I will say that is somebody that I feel like, still today, like, that is someone that probably saved my life. There are people during my drinking that I can look back, still have a best friend today that, you know, she's normal, and, but that I really think, like, you know, she was someone that protected me for a long time, and I've had a chance to make amends to her and, you know, go back and repair that relationship, but I'm still really grateful for those people in my life today. And, but what happened for me was, I mean, it just kept getting worse. It kept getting worse. It never got better. And, what happened for me was on December 3rd of 2006, I went out for that friend's birthday, and, we were drinking all day long. And by that time, I'm drinking, you know, I am drinking all day long. When I found out what drinking in the morning did for you, it was like one of the most glorious days of my life. And I am not exaggerating with that. Like, I was like, the hangover's gone in like an instant. Like, she's got to get right back on the horse and get going. Like, this is great. You know, why didn't someone tell me about this? And, you know, and so by that time, it's, we're drinking all day long. And, you know, and that's one of those days, that I was drinking all day long. And, you know, and here's what happened. I was drinking all day long and everybody else went to go home. And I went home too, because I thought I had alcohol still in my house, and I didn't. I got home and it was late enough that I'd either have to go back out to the bar, but there wasn't, you know, early enough that I could go out and buy some more alcohol. And my head was so damn loud. I was so drunk, physically drunk. I mean, I had been drinking since, you know, like 9:30 in the morning. And I was physically drunk, but my head was so loud and it wouldn't shut up. And I didn't have alcohol, and I freaked out. And, you know, what happened was, some people, this happens, you know, like right before they got sober. It talks about in our literature, the jumping off place. Like, you know, I really was sitting in this disgusting, filthy apartment that I really describe the same way every time I get the opportunity to speak, because it's good for me to hear about, just for me, you know, that where I came from. And I'm sitting in this apartment that no one had been to in 6 months, including the person that I was dating. No one had been to in 6 months, because it was, there was vomit and urine everywhere. There was old food. There was beer bottles and wine bottles and cigarette butts put out in them, and cigarettes put out everywhere. And it was disgusting, and I would get, like, all jazzed up and dressed up, you know, and, like, come out of my house thinking I'm all, like, hot and, like, dying. But, you know, I thought that, no, you know, I had this personality when I would step out the door that everything was fine. And, you know, but I'm not showing up to work by that time. You know, I'm working for my mom. She's getting ready to fire me for, like, the fifth time. I'm not going to probably be able to pay rent this month. You know, and it sort of just all came crashing down, and I really got to that point where I could not imagine living this. I was living like an animal. I was truly living like an animal. And by that time, I had no real relationships in my life. I had people that were still trying to help me get it together, but I didn't have any genuine connection with them at all. You know, I had nothing to give to anybody, and I didn't know how to receive anything from anybody. I couldn't hear anything. And, you know, I was sitting all alone in that apartment, filthy, disgusting apartment, and I could not imagine not living this way. But I could not imagine. I could see that you were living differently, but there was no bridge that I could see that I could walk over to get to where you were living. I had no clue how to do that, and I really wanted to. And all those times that I described to you, you know, of the moving and the trying to get the life together, I really believed I could do it. I really wanted to in my heart. This is not the way that I was raised. This is not the way that I wanted to live. Like, I knew that this was wrong, but I just couldn't do it. And I really can't, you know, this is a big sign for me of my skewed perception of my own life, is that I, at that time, really thought that taking my own life was a good decision and a good way out. You know, not caring one bit about how that would affect anybody else in my life. Couldn't see that at all. All I knew at that time was, is I could not feel this way anymore. This pain, this uncomfortable, you know, feeling around everything and everybody, and I just couldn't take it anymore, you know. And I had a bunch of pills, and I took those pills, you know. And I did a really horrible thing, and I called my parents, who weren't living in the area by this time, you know. And I told them I was going to kill myself. And let me tell you, you know, I have an excellent relationship with my parents today, but I can never take that away from them. I can certainly try never to live that way again. And I can only do that by being here. And, I obviously I woke up the next morning because I'm here. I describe this the same way pretty much every time. And it's because a friend sort of put this in my, she spoke somewhere and I heard it, and she talked about, she could not imagine pulling herself up by her bootstraps one more time when she, you know, right before she came into AA. And that's the way that I felt. I woke up that morning and I could not imagine one more time trying to come up with some plan. Like, finally, I was like defeated and, hopeless. And I'm, thank God. Because what happened was, you know, I ended up 2 days later in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I had been mandated by the courts to go to AA during some of my DUIs, but I never went. You know, I lied and said that I went. I ended up in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was a Wednesday, and that was a meeting that a lot of people in my home group go to. My mom had to come with me because, once again, I could not leave the house by myself. She had flown in that day to help me. And, and we went to the first meeting together. And, God, I'm really grateful for that first meeting. Let me tell you why. That meeting adhered to the traditions. And, you know, their primary purpose in that meeting was to carry the message to the next suffering alcoholic. And that's absolutely what they did. Men and women in that meeting surrounded me after the meeting. I actually sat, I don't know if you guys, it's not, you guys are pretty good here, but a lot of the meetings that I go to, it tends to end up like the girls clump together over on one side because everyone's sitting with like sponsors and friends, and then the guys are like over here, and I sat with my mom on the guy's side, which isn't surprising at that time, but, it's so weird. I'm in the middle of a group of guys, and so, you know, we're ready to, we sit in that meeting, and, my mom is not an alcoholic, and I, I'm really grateful to the person who was leading that meeting that night. And I don't know what step we were on, but I can tell you that he was talking about, so I'm going to assume that he was possibly talking about the first step. But this gentleman, who I still know today, he was talking about the doctor's opinion, and he was talking about restlessness, irritability, and discontent. And when I heard those words, that was the first time in my entire life that I have ever heard anybody accurately describe how I had felt for most of my life and never been able to put words to the way that I was feeling. All I know was is I was really angry and I really hated you, you know, in whatever moments. But I didn't know, and I was just very angry. And he started to also explain. He explained the phenomenon of craving, you know, the allergy of the body. He was describing that obsession of the mind. And, you know, I think it's really important for me today to make sure that when I'm in a meeting that, and I'm keeping that in the back of my mind, that my job there is to be, you know, an example of Alcoholics Anonymous and to make sure that that message is getting through, by opening my mouth and sharing, because I had a window. I really believe I had a window and it was open in that meeting, and I heard what I needed to hear so that I could stay here. And I'm someone that's been here since my first meeting, and I just say that not because I'm special or I did anything special, but just because when I was new, I heard a lot of people that were just sort of coming in other rooms, which is, you know, a lot of people's experience. But I needed to hear that, like, if you don't have to go anywhere. You can stay if you want, you know. And I, in that meeting, like I said, I got surrounded by people, and one of them was this gentleman who just wanted to hold us until they could run downstairs and get the person who would end up, to, you know, being my first sponsor in AA. And she came upstairs and she asked me what I was doing the next day. Guess what? I had nothing going on the next day, you know, because I couldn't go to work. I didn't have a job. I didn't even want to go back to my apartment at that time. Like, I just, I had nothing going on, and I showed up to that meeting the next day, and my mom came with me again, you know. And, the difference was is that, like, you know, I'm sitting in the meeting, like, nodding my head, like, oh, my God, where has this been? You know, like, this is what's wrong with me. And that's my experience. That's not everybody's experience. It's only my experience. My mom's sitting next to me, like, looking at me, like, you know, oh my God, like, this is you, you know, and not me. And we left the second meeting, and I have been, I got picked up and swooped up by those girls in AA, and for what happened, you know, this is the rest of the story for me. I have been very blessed to have the opportunity and to take the opportunity to stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and these women scooped me up and started to teach me how to live life again. Actually, live life at all for the first time. And I got a sponsor immediately, like I said. I'm really grateful for that. If you don't have a sponsor, you're not getting married to them. You know, just get the sponsor. The sponsor for me, is someone that helps take me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, helps read with me this book, because I like to twist and distort things, and so I need someone to walk me through it, so that I'm getting a clear little, accurate perception of what's happening in here, and I need to hear people's experience of how they live sober, and they take these actions and steps, and they walk through life sober, and that's what my sponsors have always helped me to do, and they've always shared their experience, strength, and hope with me, and they've given me so much time, so much time, and I have to remember that. And we had someone in our lives when I first got sober that would say that the greatest gift that we can give someone is our time, and that really is something that is so true here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm grateful for all those women that gave me the time. And I started working the steps, and that's where my life changed. I like I mentioned, I needed to know that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life, was unmanageable. And pretty early on, like, that obsession to drink was removed from me. And I will tell you, here's what I was doing at that time. These women were, like, reaching their hand out left and right to everybody in the meeting. So I just started doing that, like, because I guess that's what you just do. And they were picking women. I'm saying women. The men are doing this, too. The men. And there was plenty of men that helped me that were very lovely and helped me. It helped me in my sobriety. But at the time, it was the women, and I stuck close to them. And we were picking people up and going to meetings. And we were going to meetings every day, and I was calling my sponsor every day. And I started working these steps, and the obsession was removed pretty quickly for me. In the first step, I was not confused about the powerlessness. I really could get down with the idea of the allergy of the body, and I could see where, there was an issue with, this obsession and this idea that I always told myself that it would be okay to drink. Even when it was a really bad idea, and I really started to see that my life was unmanageable unmanageable by me, that any of these ideas, and I just described to you some awesome ideas that I came up with while I was drinking, that's what we come up with, that's my way of living life, lie and run that's how I handle, and I started to learn how to face life and to realize that I can't do it by myself. I need a lot of people to help me with that. And that is a big part of my first step for me, is the we of it all. And I can't, I can't just be doing service, and I can't just be talking to my sponsor. I can't just be going to meetings. Like, I gotta have all these, like, little pieces together for me. And you guys told me that, so you tell me I'm powerless, and you tell me that, my life is unmanageable, and I'm by me, and I can do, and it's like, but you tell me that I have to find a power greater myself. Okay, what's that, and where do you find that? And at first, it was the group. It was the group. Like, I just started doing all this stuff that, like, totally goes against any natural instinct that I ever have. I started, help people, and, like, call people, and show up when you say you're going to show up. I started to just, and the reason why I had faith and I believed in you is because you told me openly and shared with me openly that you have walked in my shoes before, that you used to live the way that I used to live, and you don't live that way anymore. And I used to share that I saw, like, all these people were happy, and that's not what it was. For me today, I understand, like, you were living differently. You were living the way that I'd always wanted to live but never knew how to do it. And so I started to believe you, and I started to take the action that you take. And part of those are, continuing to work the rest of the steps. And here's where you find a power greater than yourself. And for me, that's God. And I found God through working the steps. The steps brought me to a God of my understanding, and it keeps in constantly, it's constantly evolving today. And I started to take actions like, seeking God's will in my life. What the hell? Like, what is that? That sounds so complicated. And when people broke it down really simply for me, it was start doing things like, take the next right action. And if you don't know what the next right action is, ask somebody. Don't make it up yourself. Call your sponsor, call your friends, call somebody outside of this that, part of my unmanageability is that anything that I'm emotionally connected to, I can skew and twist and manipulate and justify and turn it into something really good to do. And it's usually, you know, burns down something. But, you know, but it, you know, started to take the next right action and to do what's in front of me. What? Do what's in front of me. Okay. So that means that, like, when I'm at work and I'm supposed to be working, that I probably, you know, shouldn't be obsessing about, you know, the whatever happened before work or after work or what I think is going to happen tomorrow or I think just happened yesterday or whatever it is, but learning to, like, actually work when I'm at work and learning to start to take actions to be present. And that's why it was so, and to make that decision, and I still, that's so important to me, to make that decision like it talks about in the third step, and that really for me was making that decision to go on with the rest of the steps, you know? And because I needed to clear a lot of things out of the way so that I can continue to forge that relationship with a higher power and get out whatever's blocking me from learning to be useful and effective in the world around me and slow me down enough and give me an awareness of, like, you know, what the next right action is. But I had to learn some things. And, you know, the fourth and fifth step were a pivotal. We were just talking earlier about the fourth and fifth step. And I really believe that I said this out loud to two people before I did my fourth step, that I really believed that I don't know where I heard it, or I must have heard it meaning, but I really said I believed that I was a nice girl who drank too much. Now, that story, this last, you know, 30 minutes I've spent with you, does that sound like I was a nice girl who drank too much? What? You know, like, yeah, that's a crazy lady. That's insanity. And I really, when I did my first four step, I truly was, like, dumbfounded. Like, this is a, I'm a liar. I'm a cheat. I'm a manipulate. I'll steal from you. I'll steal your car. I'll steal your peace of mind, like, whatever, like, it doesn't matter, like, if I want to drink, I don't care what is in my way, I will remove it however I need to, and quite frankly, it's very obvious to me that I can do that with anything in my life today, that if I want something, I have to be very clear that it is in me to do whatever I, you know, want to, like, get to it, and that it's not a way to live, and I was really like, but there was a sense of relief that comes from that. I don't know if people, I mean, I get it. But like actually seeing myself for who and what I really am, one of my favorite lines in the 12 and 12 in the fifth step actually, is the description of humility, which I actually get more than any other description of humility that we hear, but it, and excuse me if I horribly paraphrase it, but, you know, it's essentially like a clear recognition of who and what we really are, followed by a sincere attempt to become what we could be. And I had no idea until I did my fourth step what I really was, you know, and who I really was. And that is me. And if that is me and I get to see that, you know, then I get, there's an opportunity to change. There's an opportunity to grow. If we know what we're working with, I got a shot here, but I can't do it myself. And that's why I needed the fifth step. And a wonderful thing happened the fifth step. It actually wasn't, the fifth step wasn't, I somehow thought that the fourth and fifth step, I was going to see what I needed to see and tell you about it, and it's going to be glorious, and then we're going to move on with life, and I'm going to be an angel. And that didn't happen. What happened was, is I told, you know, my sponsor at the time everything. And by the way, that was the first time in my entire life that I had told one person everything. For all my life, it was all compartmentalized. Over here, over here, over here, over here. People knew little pieces, blah, 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 but no one knew the full picture. And this person, for the first time, knew the full picture. And there comes another relief and another freedom. Like, God, so, okay. And I really do believe that that was sharing that with, you know, God. She wasn't my God, but, you know, that was that kind of interaction that happens. Like, it talks about, like, the language of the heart that we speak. I believe God is there when we're doing that. And, you know, and when I shared all that stuff with her, she didn't judge me. She didn't judge me at all. And in fact, she told me stories that, like, she'd done the exact same thing. And I was blown away by that. And what happened for me was I did not feel awesome the next day. I was like, oh, my God, why did you tell that lady all that stuff? like, I can't believe you just told her that. I hope she doesn't tell anybody. You know, all that craziness. And, but what happened for me is this person, me, this image girl, egotistical, I don't want you to look badly at me. I don't want you to think I'm a bad person. I'm awesome. And this person that didn't ever let anybody in, this weird thing started to happen because she didn't judge me. I started to find myself, like, driving the car with, like, somebody random, not her. And all of a sudden, that stuff that was on my fourth step, they would describe to me something that happened in their life, and I would be like, I did that too, and I would then say it to them. And then I started sharing in meetings that stuff openly. Not everything openly. You don't need to hear that, some of that stuff. But I started to connect with people, real connections, because that's how, for me, my experience in Ben, and Melissa and I were actually just talking about this, it's not all of the reason why we have close bonds today. But I will tell you that the bonds that we have with people in Alcoholics Anonymous are based in, like, for me, in our defects. Like, to know that, you know, you think that way, I don't know, screwy way too, and that you took that action too, and then that cuts that craziness in half for me of, how bad I am or what, you know, it's not even real, a lot of it's not even real, and, but it really, I started to form these, real, like, genuine relationships because I was being honest with people and learning to share my defects with them, and I started to, we kind of, glazed over 6 and 7, the sponsor at the time, we just wasn't a big deal, but eventually I started doing the steps with a different sponsor, and we kind of went back to 6 and 7. And 6 and 7 are a huge part of my sobriety still today. And, to sum it up really quickly, because I think it's about like 5 minutes, but, 6 and 7 is like, 6 is a lot about acting as if for me. And if I don't know what acting as if, that means, then I need to ask somebody about what that is. And it's like, yes, I see all these defects about myself, but what's the antonym to that? If I am greedy, what's the opposite of that? That's being generous. Well, how do you be generous? Well, if I don't know how to do that, then I need to ask somebody how to do that. And I need to stop acting greedy, And 7 became a lot of it to do with more getting God involved in the situation. Because, my sponsor can help me, my friends can help me, but really it's God that's got to help me. And really believe that whatever defects are prevalent right now, in some way I'm learning something. And that, one may be an asset one day and one may be a liability the other day, and I just have to accept whatever it is. And I just have to try my best, like that, the description of humility, like that sincere attempt to become what I could be, and just try to take the next right action, the next opportunity I have. And really, it has a lot to do with my actions in Alcoholics Anonymous. Being in meetings where God is certainly in all my meetings, there's a power in here for me that is indescribable, that when I may not want to drink today when I come into a meeting, but I will tell you that there may be some sort of problem that's going on in my life, and I can come to a meeting, I can sit with you all, and when I leave that meeting, it is either whatever extreme emotion, feeling, whatever it is either dissipated or it's gone. And I'm not able to do that by myself all day long. And 7 was about, like, really getting God involved in the situation. And then I got to the amends process. And I've been talking about this a lot lately. I've had the opportunity. There had to have a change. My old sponsor of mine used to talk about having a change of heart. And that really happened since 6 and 7 for me. Just having, starting to live differently and to have this change of heart that we need. And by the time I got to the amends, I got to make amends with a lot of different people in my life. But one profound relationship in my life is my brother. And my brother, when I was drinking, was very, now I know today because of the amends process, that he was very scared for me. And that sort of came out in a way like, what the hell's wrong with you? Get your life together. He's a military boy. He's like someone that, like, chose to go to military school in high school so he's going to have discipline. Are we related? And he's had a very successful career in life, and he's such an honorable guy. My God, he's my younger brother, but I so look up to him. But he was disgusted with me. He was, like, literally disgusted and nauseated by my presence in it because I was just a horrible human being. It is the truth. It is the truth. And And I talk about him because he's probably the most profound difference by working these steps and staying in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've seen my life change. And I have 2 minutes to talk to him. Today he has shared so much with my life, with me about his life. Like I've given the opportunity to come with him to buy the wedding ring for his wife, at his wedding, the last dance. He grabbed me and he found me and grabbed me for the last dance and held me close and tight and was like, I'm so proud of you and thank you so much for helping us during this time. Thank you so much for being my life. Thank you so much for being who you are. And I tell you that because that is not me. That's not me. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. Those are the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that have taught me how to live, that have taught me how to be a sister, how to be a daughter, because of any kind of, you name it, a worker, anything. Anything that I am today, whoever I am today is because of AA. And, and today I live in 10, 11, 12, and I, continue to take inventory in my life. I take it all the time, and I talk to my sponsor about it all the time, and I still need her outside perspective, thank God, and I still need to look at myself always because my first, inclination is it's you, not me, and prayer and meditation is a big part of my life as well. It helps me to when inventory and prayer and meditation are going on in my life all together. It is described in the 12 and 12, but it is my firm experience that there's a sense of ease and comfort that I have in my life that I have never experienced before when all that is happening. And it is important to have that practice and to seek that conscious contact still on a daily basis. And in 12, my biggest joy in my life today is getting to reach my hand out to women in Alcoholics Anonymous, I swear to God. And getting the chance to sponsor someone. I hope you stick around long enough. It flips your sobriety upside down in ways I can't even describe. And I really do relate to the whole, when people talk about, it is a joy to get to pass those messages along and take someone through the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, but it is a whole different ballgame to watch them do it for somebody else. It brings immense joy to me in my life. And that's the deal. I experience this crazy amount of joy. Not every day. I have bad days. Trust me. I just quit smoking last week. We have our days, and I'm not perfect. And I fall short all the time, every time. And thank God, because that lets me still relate to you and feel like I belong here. It always goes back. Everything that's happening, in my life that's, good or bad, I always need to come back to here. It's always here. The solution is here for me. Getting outside of myself, being of service, being useful and effective. I've had a spiritual awakening. That's what that's about. I've got this God consciousness on one side, and I have this other-centeredness on the other side that I never knew until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I'm paying attention to you and seeing what I can do for you, I feel God everywhere in my life, and I see God everywhere in my life. And when I'm concerned about me, I don't see anything but negative things going on with me. And the more negative I focus on, the bigger that grows. And so I'm really grateful that we have this wonderful life that's given to us. And if you don't feel that way today, I totally get that too. And just tell somebody about it. Just reach your hand out. There's so much love in this room. And, and anybody's willing to help you. And thank you for letting me come out here. Thank you. I hope that was put together a little bit, but I hope you guys have a great day, so thanks.